The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Well, the newspapers are full of Brexit again this morning, as you'd imagine, but particularly across the water. The British newspapers have saturation coverage in many respects of David Cameron's memoirs, which he's publishing. Yes, that David Cameron. And he says basically that he's truly sorry for the division that the Brexit referendum caused. But of all of the coverage, my favourite headline is on page 28 of The Guardian, and it says, "Welcome to the trickiest job in Britain, the publicist for Cameron's book launch." Well, we'll be talking a little bit about the beef sector later and the possible impacts that Brexit might have on it. But my first guest this morning is a man who has travelled the world with a career in fashion. Peter O'Brien has worked with Givenchy, Dior and Chloe. These days he's working with Dunn Stores and has just launched his fifth collection there. Peter, you're very welcome to the programme. I'm always a bit conscious if somebody from the fashion industry comes in that you're sort of looking at what I might have, I might be wearing and thinking, oh God, that's so poor, so poor.
No, I did.
Does that happen?
No,
did it happen this morning?
Not really, because I think, especially at a time like this when you've been working on a launch, the last thing you want to think about is clothes or fashion. So you kind of, you know, shelve it in the part of your brain that's mentioned work, you know. Obviously, you know, if you see something extraordinary, you will notice it. But I tend really not to pay a huge amount of attention to what people wear.
I thought I was wearing something extraordinary, but obviously it didn't work, Peter. When you go back to your own career, let's go back to the very start. Growing up, were you interested in fashion? Were you noticing fashion and what people
Yes,
wore?
Absolutely. It's strange. I just drew. My mum says I always had a pencil in my hand. I've told this story millions of times. I got into trouble in school because I used to draw ladies in ball gowns on copy books. I was always interested in clothes. I used to love watching old Hollywood movies and kind of dissecting the costumes and trying to figure out how they were made. Yeah, it was odd, but it was a really kind of organic thing. I just was fascinated by clothes. Women's clothes, I had really no interest in men's at all.
Outside of an interest in clothing and fashion, school, were you, did you enjoy school? Were you interested in school? Could you wait to get out of it?
I was pretty good at school. I was very good at English. I was good at kind of arts, humanities. I suppose I was an odd guy in school because I liked to read rather than play football. I hated playing Gaelic on a Wednesday afternoon. So they finally allowed me to do an art class in the school hall. So the boys would go and play football and I would sit in the school hall and draw three withered apples and a banana, you know, this terrible old still life.
And you were sort of on your own.
I was totally on my own.
You grew up in Dublin on the north side, in Finglas.
Yes,
in Dublin.
I did. Yeah.
So art wasn't necessarily a big
part
of the school.
No, not necessarily. No. And it seemed, I mean, I've often said this before and I don't mean to sound in any way tragic, but I think if you grow up in a working class area, there's a feeling that things like theatres and bookshops and seemed in some way inaccessible, or they were for posh people in a way. So when I finally did get to go to art school, it seemed like this amazing thing that I never thought could happen happened when I went to St. Martin's in London. But yeah, I always liked.
But you bailed out of school early, you said.
I left
before
15.
The leaving cert, you were 15.
I did my intern, yeah.
You started working for
I worked in Best's in O'Connell Street. I did window display and then I went to work in Arnott's and did window display. And I had done some very big drawings. They were about 8 foot tall. And a guy who was a rep for a mannequin company in London was over flogging mannequins. And he thought the drawings were great. And he said, you should work in London. And he got me a job in Alders of Croydon. So I lived in Diggs in Croydon, and I hated Croydon. I really didn't enjoy it. Sorry, Croydon. And then I got a job in what was Marshall and Snellgroves in Oxford Street, subsequently became Debenhams. And one Sunday, a journalist called Eve Pollard had written an article saying that women couldn't find the kind of clothes they wanted in stores. And she invited her readers to send in ideas of what they'd like to buy. So I sent a load of sketches in. And Eve Pollard is Claudia Winkleman's mother. And anyway, she very kindly invited me to lunch. and said you should either go and work as an apprentice for someone like Bill Gibbers, Andrew Rhodes, or apply to college. And, you know, they say fools rush in. So I did a load of drawings, sent them into St. Martin's, and I got an interview. And my aunt thinks this is a sign of, you know, great immorality. But and she told me never to tell anyone. People would see how duplicitous. Oh, God, I can't even speak this morning.
Duplicitous
I was, you know. But I lied and I said I had my leaving cert.
And they never checked.
Well, in those days, they didn't. You know, they didn't automatically go online. So I got a place on foundation. I got a grant. And then I applied. I did a degree course. And then I did an exchange program they had with Parsons School of Design in New York.
St. Martin's is a hugely prestigious
school. Yes, and kind of, had I known, I probably wouldn't have dared, you know. But, you know, it was the one nearest my office. I worked in Oxford Street. And St. Martin's was on Charing Cross Road.
Your contemporaries there, would many of them at that time...
Stephen Jones was in my class, and Stephen is now very, very famous. He designs hats. He's had exhibitions at the V&A. He works with all the big designers. The people that people know about mostly came about a year or two after I left, people like Galliano. They would have come a bit later. Most of the people I knew, we all went off to Paris in those days. That's what we all did, you know. We would stay in cheap hotels and ring up and say, je suis un styliste irlandais, you know, and you'd go off for interviews and bring your portfolio along. And you always asked for the press office because you knew that in the press office someone would speak English, you know. And I'd made lots of calls, and I was staying in a hotel called the Hotel Mary, which was basically a knocking shop. And we stayed there because it was opposite the coolest nightclub in the world, club called Club Set. And of course we used to, and the drinks were a fiver each, which back then was a fortune. This was like 1979, 1980. It was a huge amount of money, you know.
And so obviously it sounds like you enjoyed Paris.
Oh, brilliant time, yeah.
And it was great from a work point of view. And then you went to New York.
Yeah, I worked at Dior, then I worked at Givenchy, then I worked at Chloe, and then I went off to New York. And in order to get a green card, I had a friend whose father was a furrier, and they kind of made up this job. So, you know, so I went to work in the Fur District of New York and was monumentally unhappy. I hated it. All those dead animals hanging. I really didn't enjoy it at all.
Put you off fur for life?
It kind of did. Yeah, I just didn't enjoy the experience. And then when Rochas came knocking at my door in Paris, they said, would you like to come back to Paris and relaunch fashion at Rochas? So I did. And that was 1990 I went back. And I stayed there until 2014.
And what was wrong with New York, apart from the dead animals and the fur element of it?
I loved being in New York, but I really didn't like my job. And because I had that job, in order to get my green card, I don't know. I think because the job didn't make me happy, it kind of coloured my whole experience of being in New York. And working on 7th Avenue, because I knew people who did, it seemed much more commercial, much more business driven than the kind of, you know, ivory tower situation that I had worked in Paris. I just longed to be back in Paris and that kind of, you know, that environment of old Paris fashion houses.
It might sound a bit cliched on my part, but you'll have to forgive me. The Devil Wears Prada film is what I would kind of associate with that whole fashion world in the United States. Is it like that? Is that accurate?
I think it is. I mean, I think when you're in it, it becomes a job like any other job. But I think to people on the outside, it must seem utterly preposterous sometimes. There are lots of not very nice people in the business, like there are lots of not very nice people in many businesses. And I think to be really successful in what is, particularly nowadays, a very cutthroat business, you have to be kind of tough, you know. And especially if you're a woman and you're tough.
And from a business point of view, did you have a good head for
terrible,
business early
awful,
on?
Awful, the worst in the world. Couldn't, if I made money, I spent it, burned a hole in my pocket, couldn't save, couldn't invest. Absolutely useless. Terrible. I mean, I'm like someone with learning difficulties when it comes to money or business.
You say I am rather than
totally.
I was.
I've no interest in it. Doesn't interest me at all.
What about the paperwork and VAT returns?
Well, I do.
A business plan?
No, I don't have business plans. I'm always amazed that I've gotten as far as I have because I don't have that killer instinct. I'm not hugely ambitious. So I feel like I kind of drifted along this path. I think I'm quite, this sounds very arrogant, I think I'm quite good, I'm very good at what I do. And I think had that been married to some kind of a killer instinct, I would be, you know, I'd own an empire. But it never interested me. Love affairs were always more interesting than making more money, or having a lie-in was better than working all night. And true, I mean, I'm being very honest about
that. That's why you look so happy.
maybe it is. I mean, and I always felt, I'm not crazy about fashion. I love clothes, and I like the whole, the business of making clothes and how they're made. My happiest times in Paris were not fashion shows or fancy parties. It was
you're
always,
not crazy about fashion.
The business of fashion, not really. And there's too many people talk about it, and there are too many words. You know, Francis Bacon once, Melvin Bragg asked him to explain his paintings. And he said, if I could explain them, I wouldn't have to paint them. And nowadays, there are all of these people talking about fashion, and it's iconic, and it's a hero, and it's all bullshit, you know. They're just clothes. And I think I do it very instinctively. So I find it very hard to tell journalists, you know, fairy tales of how I saw moss on a rock in the west of Ireland and a princess was kidnapped and she... I mean, that's not how I work. And I think journalists often expect that from a designer.
But drawing is a big part
drawing
of what you do.
For me, it's really... And I know lots of designers and lots of very good designers don't draw. For me, it's a bit like, you know, automatic writing. You know, when people used to do seances and they would hold pen. And that really happens to me. I tend not to think about what I'm going to draw. Fabrics will influence me, but I start to draw. And after 25, 30, 40 rough sketches, I'll do one that I like. And you kind of think, okay, this is where I start, and you go from there. But the act of drawing is really integral for me to designing. I couldn't do it any other way.
So there are no muses or anything like that that inspire the drawing?
Well, I worked with a woman in Paris called Helga, who was my fit model, and who was brilliant and bright and funny. And she really inspired me hugely. I think you do. I mean, I have lots of women friends who I do. I think my job as a designer is to kind of make women feel comfortable and happy and, you know. I always think it's dodgy territory for a man to kind of, you know, pontificate about what women should wear, what anyone should wear. So I feel I just propose an aesthetic, and if they like it, I'm very happy. But yeah, there are people you think of that you'd love to wear. Yesterday, for example, this is a silly story, but it's 100% true. We launched the collection yesterday and a woman came into the shop. She wasn't a young woman. She lives in New York, so she won't hear this. Unbelievable. And she put on my clothes and it was like my drawings came to life. She was probably in her mid-50s, you know. It was brilliant. It was this magical moment. So that makes me really
happy. And everything about it worked. There's a text in from Barbara and she says, thank you for making beautiful clothes accessible to normal women.
But that's what I like.
Is that difficult to do?
No, because I think if you sit down and think I'm going to design avant-garde clothes, or I'm going to design very classic clothes, or I'm going to design easy clothes, I think it becomes forced. I think it's like a playwright or a painter or an actor. I think you have to go with your instincts, you know. And I design the kind of clothes. It's like handwriting. I've been doing it for 30 years now. So I think what you do is you continue your story. You know, each collection is a follow-on to the one previous.
You came back to Ireland. Originally, you were working with A-Wear, and then for a number of years now, you've been doing Dunn Stores. How is working for Dunn's different? It's very, I would imagine, it's very different to Dior, but is it?
It's different in as much as the environment in which the clothes are sold is different. The process of designing is really not that different, and when I'm designing for Dunn's, I design as though I was in Paris, truly in my head. And sometimes there are compromises to be made because, you know, you have to reach certain price points.
Fabrics.
But they're brilliant. And it's an extraordinary kind of freedom. And a lot of designers who do this will tell you this. They take all the headaches away from me. You know, I get the easy bit. I get to design it. I choose the fabrics. And they worry about all the difficult things.
How do you work then? For example, what are you doing right now?
I'm working on next spring, summer. I'm a bit late, but that's what I'm working on at the moment. I'm doing the drawings for next spring, summer.
When you look around the industry, Peter, as somebody who's been in it for a long time, and you see the way it is changing, it's always changing, but what do you make of somebody, let's say, like Victoria Beckham, who's built an enormous brand, an enormous business. We're told that she's very hands-on in the design. I don't know, she's probably not a designer, but I don't know how all that works.
Who knows? I mean, the business has changed. Once upon a time when I went to Paris first, the name over the door tended to be the name of the designer behind the desk. They're now all owned mostly by two big corporations, LVMH or the Pinot Group. So for the big corporations that own the design houses now, the brand tends to be more important than the designer. So you very often revolving doors of designers in the houses. And whereas once upon a time, anyone in any street in any suburb could tell you who Christian Dior was, people might today, unless they work in fashion, have a hard time telling you who the designer at Dior was.
Is that because they make more money from the accessories?
Yes, the clothes. The clothes in lots of cases are marketing tools, which are made to be Instagrammed, to be, you know, to sell handbags, perfume, entry-level products. It's very hard to make a lot of money with expensive clothes because we've become used to excessively priced clothes, you know. And the women who bought clothes in couture houses back in the 40s, 50s, even the 60s and 70s don't exist anymore. You know, those women who would go for three or four fittings, who were married to rich men and stayed home. It's a woman who really doesn't exist anymore, you know. Women spend their own money these days.
Well, Peter O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us on the programme, and the best of luck with the latest collection. Thank you for that.